You're listening to Clock Radio Speakers with Armand and Doc. And now, side B.
Speaking of complex.
Yes, sir.
Do we want to have this conversation now? Do we want to?
I think we do. I really want to be in this conversation. I really do. I have a lot to say about this.
What are we talking about, Armand?
So, you know, a podcast or a show that we kind of, well, I threw jabs at earlier in the year. I'm not going to say we, but Everyday Struggle has turned from awkward morning show to must-see TV over the course of 2017. And Joe Budden, who, oh boy, I've been a fan of his since 2001. And he's been Mr. Irrelevant since about 2005. And now all of a sudden, he's become the people's champ. And I actually just read an article where Billboard confirmed that he would no longer be on Everyday Struggle moving forward. And also heard that they're working on, they don't have Academics contract right either. So what does this mean for the First Take of hip hop? And, you know, just, yeah, like it's just really interesting for me to see him, for me to see people clamor for Joe Budden to do something besides die. It's crazy.
I want to hear Wes's input on this, but I mean, an obvious move for him is basically almost like the Bill Simmons route where it's like, oh yeah, that's cool. Like, so instead he has the Joe Budden podcast or whatever he wants to call it. He'll have an audience. He'll, you know, he can do video. He can do the whole thing. Like he doesn't, you know. He doesn't necessarily need the Everyday Struggle brand to me. Now, I'm not an everyday consumer of that show, but I think he can do his own thing if he wants.
Yeah, go ahead, Wes.
Yeah, this is the classic case of, and it's funny because, you know, we're talking about Joe, but in reality, it's both of the guys. These guys have done it the old fashioned route of being able to create their own lane without a lot of backing, you know. So their digital footprint is pretty big. And that's why the show made sense to do it in the first place, was because these guys technically had already done all the work ahead of time. And so what Complex was able to do is they were able to curate an idea of pulling, two vastly different people and two vastly different followings and put them together. And so, I don't want to call it old school because I don't think Joe is old school. I think Joe is very smart. But it's a very purist way of looking at music as opposed to the millennial way of looking at music. And that's why the show works. And it's interesting because I'm one of those people that doesn't necessarily believe that either way is the right way. You know, I think that human behavior changes over time. And people are going to be people, and they're going to like what they like, and there's nothing you can do about it. And I think that's the beauty of the show. But what you're going to see, it's crazy because I don't know if you guys know, Complex just got new offices. I mean, their new spot is like really nice. Mm. And so you're moving, and I got to imagine that the reason why you were able to make that move was because partly had to be because of the success of that show. There's no way in the world that wasn't a factor in that. And I think that Joe, being as smart as he is, see, I don't think Academics has been around the corner enough to understand this. But Joe, coming from the music industry and kind of seeing this already happen from being a rapper, he understands just how much clout that he has in this situation. And he's like, oh, no, y'all not moving into new offices and that has two floors, a state of the art, this and that, off of my back, and I'm not going to see, you know, the right coinage from this. We're not going to do that, you know? So, in my opinion, I think they're going to get it together. Cause I think Complex knows, like, if they don't get it together, I mean, just the everyday viewership is going to drop off, because I'm not going to lie, before the show came out, I had stopped looking at Complex. I couldn't even remember the last time I had looked at Complex before the show came, you know, before the show broadcasted. So, the fact that, you know, they had a show that was able to keep me engaged with their brand, and I'm pretty sure I'm not the only one. I'm pretty sure you guys are probably in the same category, you know, just knowing you guys. They got to get this right, man. They really got to get this right. And I'm happy for Joe. If they don't get it right, he's going to go to probably a better platform. He's going to make the money he's supposed to make. And that platform is going to win with or without DJ Academics, you know? But I do think that the dynamics of both of them being together, like, it's mad funny because a lot of people are like, I'm not watching the show if it's just Academics, but Academics needs to be across from Joe. That's what makes the show work, you know?
Yep. Because they've definitely got, because we're not going to sit up here and act like Academics doesn't already have a huge loyal fan base that is just as rabid for him as Joe's fan base is rabid for him. So that's one of the many reasons why that works. I did see some stuff. I think Charlamagne Instagram a picture of the two of them together, like talking in front of a camera. I've heard rumors about Joe going to Vice. I've heard rumors of Joe bringing his podcast to Tidal. And for me, I feel like Joe's podcast is, because when I watch Everyday Struggle, I skip Academics parts. I just go straight to Joe. But Joe's podcast is infinitely better. It's more off-road. It's more like barbershop talk, where we're not rehashing the same five or six topics. They're not talking about X and whoever else in the news, Migos, like all the time. They're talking about other stuff. It's funnier, whatever. So now you have an instance where you have your podcast, which I think Rory just tweeted today that they get 300,000 listens a week, which is great. So you've got that mixed with the Complex audience, which has obviously been, as you said, Wes, extremely successful. All these people are now going to navigate the Joe's podcast. Joe's podcast this week is going to be nuts. And so people are essentially going to be waiting on him. It's going to be like The Decision. You know, he can low key go on ESPN or Instagram Live or wherever and announce where he's going to make his next move. And people are going to flock and gravitate to wherever he goes, because it's amazing. Like I always say, Joe is a sociopath, and he is. He's a genius, but he's crazy. And his ability to tell the truth and then lie about telling the truth and then double back. Like, I've listened to Joe long enough to know, like, when he's just completely manipulating the situation, and he just surrounds himself with people who allow themselves to be manipulated. And all this is just layers to his mind that is absolutely crazy, but at the same time, it works.
And Joe, it's hilarious, bro.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's just crazy to just watch him work people and then convince them that they're not being worked. But then, like, they know that he's working them, like, mentally. It's crazy. I agree with that. Like, so then it's funny. So now you've got the whole, you know, the Migos thing. They put out a video. They put out a video for a compilation that, nobody cared about this Migos compilation or this Quality Control, which is what? Is this Migos? Is this Coach K's record label or his production company? Who's Quality Control?
It's the group
it's Coach K's Peoples.
Yeah, it's the group that they signed Migos and Yachty, right?
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So they put out a compilation, and you would assume that a compilation with Migos and Yachty would have some sort of show. Well, maybe not Yachty, because Yachty kind of nosedived this year, and that was kind of Joe's doing, from Yachty to be like the face of everything to him being virtually invisible for the second half of the year. I think his Everyday Struggle appearance had a lot to do with that. But so you got a project with Migos and Yachty. You would assume that it would have some sort of traction, and like nobody cared. So they are now put out a video. They're spoofing Everyday Struggle and basically riding the wave, the successful wave of Mr. Irrelevant, to get people to notice, like, hey, we put out a project this week. That's crazy.
Yeah. Well, I don't necessarily think it's not riding off of Joe Budden. It's riding off of their clash that they had at whatever that BET Awards, I think it was last year.
Yeah, it was BET Awards, yep.
Yeah, it's really riding on, you're right. I mean, it is kind of riding on Joe's wave, but it's definitely the foundation of that wave is the issue that they had in that infamous meeting. And the funny part about that is I kind of laugh about it, because like it really was Academics that was like, say what now?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? What did you say? You know, but, you know, academics is so good at, like, not biting the hand that feeds them. You know, all, you know, it's easy to just make it about Joe. But yeah, man, it's good entertainment. You know, that's really all that matters at the end of the day, as far as, you know, trying to make the bottom line. And I think that both parties are smart. And I even think there's a part of me that doesn't even necessarily think that the Migos don't necessarily fully dislike Joe. I think that they see that as good publicity and you know, and are utilizing it, you know? So
what do both of y'all say to, you know, okay, so they threw a shot at him on the record. So not only are they spoofing Everyday Struggle in the video, they threw a shot on him and, or at him, I'm sorry. And so, of course, Joe's rabid fans are like, you got to respond with a track. Like, you're hearing more and more whispers of, we want you to rap, but Joe's been more relevant in this 1 year of him not rapping than he ever was in 13 years of him consistently rapping. So do y'all think that this should warrant a response? Do you think he should rap? Do you think he will?
He's never going to rap.
Why not never?
No, he's not going to rap.
Why never?
It really doesn't benefit him, and I think he's smart enough to know that. Rap is a weird thing where it's almost like if he responds, it's just not going to be a good look. You know what I'm saying? I don't know what it is about rap. I think it's like a kind of voodoo on us mentally, because, you know, like everybody already thinks he's bitter. So it kind of doesn't necessarily help him. Like and plus the fact, I think that we all know, I think that Joe would really only get into a battle if there was lyricism involved. And those guys just aren't, they're not going to out-rap him. Both parties know it. And I think when you get older, you just like, there's nothing to prove, you know, from that standpoint. So I don't see it happening. And that's just me. He might. And if he does, you know, then I'm just wrong as ever. But
I think also, I mean, clearly, like, he has other outlets for, like, his creativity and his thoughts. Like, it's really hard to maintain, like, your former level of output when you have a new thing.
Yep.
Right? And so,
yep.
Especially in this case where, like, there are so many monetary incentives for him to make, like, he could just pull the ESPN routine, right? So something that an interaction that he caused with him, that he had with an artist, causes this, which now he gets to talk about. And then who knows? I mean, he would love it if they kept talking about it, because that's more people who are going to come watch his show, who are going to Google Joe Budden. Like, I mean, it's a virtuous cycle for him. Like, there's no advantage at all in rapping. And that's not always a given, right? I mean, there are tons of rappers who should have never responded or didn't understand, like, power dynamics or perceived sort of, oh, well, there's the real rapper against the not real rapper. Like, you can never win that. Even just putting that aside, like, you know, unless he really, like, feels some kind of way, he can just talk about it on the show. And he can still say everything he would say in a diss record, except it's totally different.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah.
And that's the difference. Like, you know, like you had said, Armand said that earlier, that's the difference between hip hop in 2017 and in the past, you know, to still be relevant in hip hop without rapping at all.
Without rapping. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. You look at it like Doc, you and I have mostly said, like, a lot of people have said that 2017 has been an amazing year for music. You and I, most of the projects.
Who has said that?
No. That's what I'm saying. Like, I've heard a lot of people say that this year has been a great year for music, but most of the projects that you and I reviewed on the show, we haven't really been too crazy about.
Uh-huh.
But every day there is something going on in hip hop culture, right? If not every day, then at least several times a week. So it's like people are finding ways to be relevant in hip hop without actually hip hopping.
You know, right. The culture might have had a big year, but the musical output, maybe not so much.
Right. So it's finding, people are finding different. You got to think about, like, to go back to Joe, like, Joe spent most of last year dissing Drake. And what was the response? People were like, yo, like, you look upset. You look crazy right now. Like, you need to chill.
Right.
So he could totally, you know, because I feel like people like rappity rap in theory. So can we transition into talking about Black Thought on Hot 97?
Well, I was going to make this. You stole the transition from me. I was going to do the transition because I was going to say, speaking of people who have kept themselves relevant without release, without, not from their quote unquote strict musical output, right? Yeah, they're doing music on the show, but it's not like people know Black Thought's name because he's been putting out an album once a year for the last 15 years. Like they know, I mean, obviously he's, you know, MC The Roots, but they see him on TV every night.
Mm-hmm.
Right, a whole every different night. Lane for getting your name out there.
Yeah, a completely different lane.
But let's and talk about the freestyle.
Now than, they're more successful now than they've ever been, and shout out to them. But yeah, so yeah, let's talk about it. So Black Thought got on Hot 97 and rapped for 10 minutes straight.
He pulled the game.
Game's so mad right now. Game is so mad right because didn't Game do like 192 bars or something like that? I forget.
He's done 92 bars. He's done 100 bars. He's done 200 bars. He's done 300 bars.
300 bars.
Yeah, he did 300 bars. Crazy. In theory, just crazy.
So Black Thought raps for 10 minutes.
10 minutes straight.
Over the Burn beat, Mobb Deep.
Over Mobb Deep, yep.
I can't wait to hear what y'all think about. Oh, okay, okay. Well, Wes, we're gonna kick you. We can start with Wes. Wes, how did you feel about this?
Oh, I watched it like two times back to back when it first came out.
Yeah.
And obviously, being from Philly, you know, he's definitely. I mean, Black Thought's in my top five of all time, and I know I probably catch some hate about that, and I don't care. But you know, it's great to see an MC do MC things, but then also being from the city. It's just that, you know, it's just that icing on the top. And it's, yeah, man, it's just, there's just levels to emceeing. And there just is, you know what I'm saying? And I think he definitely proved a point. And I think it's weird because we were just talking about how it wouldn't benefit Joe Budden. But we're on like the complete flip side of how this totally benefits Black Thought in that It's a, hey guys, listen, I know I'm on TV every night and I know you forgot, but I'm definitely still better than everybody, literally. You know what I'm saying? And I haven't lost a step. And it's interesting. Swoop told me, told actually me and a couple guys in a group chat. He said he writes all the time. He said he witnessed him. I think Swoop said he witnessed him write like, just a whole song, like right there, and then like performed it later, like performed the bars live, like as if he had it in the chamber for like 1,000 years.
Mm.
When they were on the show with, I think it was when he was on the show with Lecrae.
Yep.
And so the fact that, like, you know, so he can confirm that he's still nice, and because he was actually able to see it in real time. I think even for myself personally, adds even more to the mystique of just how great he is, and. Yeah, man. It's just like you said, man. It's nice to hear an MC just come out and just kind of show the world, like, you know, this is what a real MC looks like, you know.
Well, I don't think you stepped out on too much of a ledge putting Black Thought in your top five, at least this week, because every person who felt that way about Black Thought, they made themselves known on Twitter.
Yeah, true.
All of a sudden, people were preaching the gospel of Black Thought, and I was like, "Where have y'all been?"
Right.
I haven't heard anybody talk about Black Thought, not in the context of being on the show, in a long time. How do I feel about this? there's two different elements to this, a couple of elements to this. So, there's just a straight up like technical mastery to what he can do. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Where you're talking to a guy like he's an athlete when it comes to rapping. Right.
Yep.
Like to rap that consistency, you know, never dip in the flow, that amount of energy, clarity with the lyrics, breath control for 10 minutes. That's just like there is a certain amount of technical mastery to that. I will admit, like, I am not somebody who particularly like values that type of technical mastery as much, but I'm gonna acknowledge it because it's incredibly impressive, right? I honestly, like, for me, like, that could have been half as long and I would have been as impressed. Like, I got to a point in there where I was like, he's really still rapping, isn't he? Like, this is really still going on. And yeah, like, he was right. It's not that the bars got like crazy, like really weak or terrible, it's nothing like that. It's just like, I mean, I'm an editor at heart, right? Like, I'm an editor at heart. Like, ask Armand. It's like, how can we cut? What can I cut? What can we do? How do I reduce? Like, it's, you know, I mean, the Kairos album notwithstanding. Like, I'm an editor at heart. So it's like, you know, this was a freestyle. Like, this was a moment. And I'm sure Armand wants to talk about how this was a moment more than anything else. But like, you know, okay, you can do this for 10 minutes. What could you do for 5? What if I gave you two and a half minutes? What could you do there? But that wasn't really the point of this. So I have to take that. Like, I have to get out of that mind state. I think it is a testament to him that he still sounds the way that he sounds at his age and how long he's been in the game. Because there are clearly some rappers who, you know, even if you get him on the right tempo and that helps, right? This is a great tempo for him. I don't want to hear Black Thought rapping for 10 minutes over a 60 BPMs trap beat. Like, that's just not, I mean, I'm sure he could do it, but that is not what, like, this got him in that right flow. But like, there are a lot of guys who came up at the same time he did, who just, they couldn't do it for 10 minutes on that kind of beat anymore. They wouldn't sound the same.
Yeah.
So I give him a lot of credit for that. I thought it was dope. I didn't think it was
I smell a segue coming.
I thought it was dope. I thought, I didn't think it was like the greatest thing I'd ever heard in my life. I didn't think it was the greatest freestyle I'd ever heard in my life. I thought it was incredibly technically impressive, and I thought it was really, really good. Of course, because it's the internet, people were like, oh my God, it's the greatest thing I've ever heard. It's like, all right. Like, it's really dope. Let's just say it's really dope. And Black Thought had a dope hip hop, like, genuine moment in 2017. And if you're a Black Thought fan, if you're a hip hop fan, like, that's a really good thing. But Armand.
Yeah, I think it might have been just a little bit deeper than that, though.
Okay.
Just because there's nobody doing that right now. I mean, there are, like, don't get me wrong, like, because that's going to sound terrible.
Yeah, know? I was going to push there's back on that. We need no one.
No, but you understand what I mean. I'm talking about as far as the national conscience goes, there's nobody doing that right now. You know what I'm saying? Probably the closest person to really being really good lyrically and rapping and kind of more the national conscious known is going to be either Kendrick and probably Rhapsody, probably the first two people that I'm thinking about. But as far as just like, I'm pretty sure like even those two would probably say, yeah, that was just still even just a bit different. You know what I'm saying? So.
Armand.
Yeah. Yes, sir.
What do you think?
Okay. So I agree with you, Doc, in the sense of from a technical standpoint, to know, I think it was the first time I heard Black Thought, 95, is that when Proceed was out? So for him to be rapping for over 20 years and to still perform at that high level is great. You know, we're currently championing LeBron right now because he's having an unreal season and this is 15 years in the league. So, you know, this is to a degree similar to that, where an artist is still at a high caliber and is still regularly doing it. You know what I'm saying? Like the Roots are currently working on an album and, you know, aside from them doing Kimmel, they still tour regularly. So, you know, it's not like this is something where Thought is, you know, dusting off the pad, you know, and even just like Wes said, where Swoop saw him write and perform something like that night, like he's still regularly doing it. And you hear other rappers. So, for example, the Wu-Tang album that came out earlier this year, I think we were really surprised at how well maybe Method Man sounded. You know, Raekwon still sounds fairly good. Ghost still sounds like solid. You know, some of those Wu-Tang members are still good. Deck had a moment or two on the album. But at the same time, when you hear those four members of Wu-Tang who in their prime were extremely sharp, Thought in 2017 still sounds like Thought in 1995. So that is a huge testament to him. I want to make 2 points. Number one is why people love this the way that they love this. And let me write down, let me take a second because I might go on a tangent and then forget about my other point because my mind often gets away. So my first point is, you know, why people love this so much. And then the other point that I want to make is Black Thought really underrated? But I'm going to start with why people love this so much. And this isn't for somebody like Wes, who is like, yo, Black Thought is in my top 5. That's more to my other point. You know, there are people and there's an audience of people who really, really, really enjoyed this. And this is not for them.
I think that there are two factors that work into people who are championing this the way that they are to such a high degree. There is a rappity rap cadence that when you don't hear it for a while and you hear it again, it sounds good. So there are hip hop boom bap purists who, it's one of the reasons why boom bap has lasted as long as it has, where you can go to a club and still hear Shook Ones Part Two, and you can still hear, you know, just certain records from like the early to mid 90s that have that gritty, rough sound. It's there's a timelessness to it. It kind of earmarks an era. So when you hear that, especially in a space where it's not really heard anymore, because the casual hip hop fan, when they think of hip hop in 2017, they're immediately going Migos, Yachty, Kodak, 21, Triple X. They're going to like what the kids are doing. Like hip hop has done a really bad job of growing up. So those of us who are in our early 30s, like you almost are only listening to older hip hop that you grew up on, because the older hip hop or the more traditional boom bap that maybe it's evolved, it's got more instrumentation to it. So you've got people like Homeboy Sandman, Odyssey. You've got people who still like, I mean, even Kendrick at his heart of hearts makes rappity rap. Like we can talk about all the other stuff, but like he is a rappity rap. What's that?
I said that was up for debate.
I mean, I don't think some people recognize just how hippity hop Kendrick really is. Hmm. It's just an evolved form of boom bap is what Kendrick does.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So it's instrumentation. It's still melody, and it's not that any of that stuff was gone. Go listen to the Far Side. They were rap singing in 92. Like this isn't new. It's just that when the casual fan hears this rappity rap cadence, like Black Thought was not, there was no harmonizing in anything that Black Thought was doing. It was words and words and words and words and words. So when people hear that, their ears are going to perk up. It's at a high level. It's 10 minutes long. So it's a thing. It's Hot 97. It's Funkmaster Flex. It's all these things. I think the other, so when they hear that and they're not used to hearing it, they're like, oh my God. But if you are regularly listening to, again, Homeboy Sandman, Odyssey, I'm still a huge fan of Sky Zoo. When you hear that, and when you're hearing it on a normal basis, you're just like, this is really good, but you're not wowed by it the way that maybe other people are. So I thought his freestyle was, it was dope. It was super dope. But I wasn't like, oh my God, what is this? Loaded Lux just got on Hot 97 2 months ago and left me speechless. That's one of the greatest freestyles that I've ever heard in my life. That's up there with Grammy Family. That's up there with Banks Workout. Like he got up there and I'm still peeling back because I went back and I listened to a lot of stuff that people were saying with a lot of the Hot 97 freestyles that people were saying were dope. So you had Sahai who had a dope freestyle, but he was too cool. There's another factor. Sahai was way too cool. He had all the chains on. He was moving around in slow motion. He didn't act like he wanted to be there. Black Thought was like, I'm up here to rap. By five or six minutes in, beads of sweat are forming on his forehead. That adds to the visual of it. Like, yo, he's really going. So to my second point, why did people... Well, no, because I want to get to that next. The Roots themselves have always been considered the underdog. The Roots have always been considered the people's champ. They've always been considered the anti of what hip hop is. We can go back to the What They Do video. So anytime they get a morsel of success, it's magnified 10 times because it's the Roots, because they are so different, because they have always embraced who they are. They've always been counterculture in a hip hop ideology, religion, culture that is counterculture itself. It's counterculture. So when Black Thought goes up there and he's in his 40s and he's not in there up there with a jersey and is in a Scully on tilt and he's not trying to meme mug and be something that he's not, but he's still rapping 98% of the other artists who are currently doing it under the table, it just makes it that much more amazing to people. So I think there's other factors that that go into that. So my final point is Black Thought really underrated? Because I don't think he is. I think he's the most overrated, underrated artist or MC. Like, I think we have him rated where he should be at. Some people, Wes has him in the top five. I'm not going to argue that. You can look at discography. You can look at all the things that people factor into what makes somebody great. And Black Thought hits all of those figures fairly closely. So I'm not going to argue that. When I think of underrated, I start thinking about underrated. If you follow me on Instagram, I was like in deep in the trenches of like 80s and 90s hip hop. And I was, you know, screen recording some of the videos and just posting them on IG stories or whatever. And Dre Murray, friend of the show, he and I constantly talk about the DOC. To me, the DOC is the most underrated MC of all time. DOC is extremely underrated. AZ is extremely underrated. DJ Quick as a rapper is extremely underrated. So when we're talking about underrated, these are people that I don't ever hear unless there are people who are really in tune to hip hop and they say, yo, that guy right there is underrated. We can look at the class of underrated that Black Thought normally goes into. We could think of Mos Def, and I think of like maybe Redman. I think he's even surpassed them in terms of notoriety. I think Kimmel helps. I think just being in a band helps. Being in the Roots helps. Still being active after all these years helps. But I think people have him exactly where he should be. And so, but he's always going to be underrated because he hits so many of these points really, really consistently and really, really high. So it just makes the narrative and it makes the moment, as we talk about on the show, where it's not about the music as much as it is about the experience. So I think that whole thing that they created was an experience. It was a moment. And for the OGs and the old heads who grew up on the Roots and who just love rappity rap, boom bap at its core, that was like, yes, Doc, you mentioned the tempo. It's impossible for a rapper to sound bad on Burn. If the Burn beat comes on and you can't rap, you should not rap. Just period. Just go do something. Don't be mad. UPS is hiring. I think that's it. But for me personally, Armand, like the same way that everyone was wild by Black Thought, the Loaded Lux just went up there 2 months ago and completely floored me. Just casually, just starts off with just thought I swing by like a girl who's curious. That's a triple entendre right out the gate. And then he just goes. And we're going to talk about battle rappers in music in a second when we talk about one of the artists on the show. But I've been way on a tangent. That's really all I've been wanting to say about that freestyle. I'm done.
Okay.
Sheesh.
Yeah.
Back in the building.
Well, listen, guys, I'm going to let you guys go ahead. I need to wrap up this pack that's going out tonight. So,
yeah,
I said I was going to be free, and then I just kind of realized, like, you know what? I still have to actually upload this pack. So let me stop playing.
No, that's all good. So Wes, real quick, where can people follow you online, and where can they go to learn about Soul Surplus?
Yeah, so I'm on Twitter and Instagram, WesPen, WESPEN _215. Soul Surplus is Soul Surplus, one word, and that's on all social media platforms. Yeah, man, and that's definitely where you can find me the most. I'm on Facebook, but really only to run the Soul Surplus account and, you know, and my business accounts and stuff like that.
Okay. Well, Wes, thank you so much for coming on. Appreciate it. I'm sure we'll have you back some point in 2018. But if we don't talk to you, man, have a good holidays.
Thanks again, guys. Really appreciate you having me.
Yep. Take it easy, Wes.
All right, fellas.
Woo!
All right.
I had a lot to say.
Yeah.
Sorry, I was holding that in.
That's okay. That's okay. Okay, so we talked Black Thought's freestyle. We started
quite a bit to go through. We still have to talk about four albums.
Okay, but then real quick, can we talk about this hypothetical reunion of Jay-Z and Jazzo real quick? Get that out the way.
Yeah, I mean, he showed up to what show was that?
Chicago, maybe?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, just
This is great. Chicago. This is a great podcast right now.
I'm sorry. I got like three different things going on right now. So we showed up to you're good. So we showed up to Chicago and then they took a picture, you know. Took a flick for the gram. Do you remember? I'm gonna pull up these diss records. I'm gonna pull up Over, first of all. Let's go here. DJ
Thorough. You ain't serious. Okay,
first
nigga.
Of all, a DJ Thorough drop is crazy.
Oh man, it's beat. Non-believer, you the worst, don't you know? Till it's, look at your name, same as the letters of your God. People put it together, ain't finished, but you nooks in your wow. All
right, okay, yeah. Wow. Mm-hmm. Yep. And then Jay responds with this. But you cookie, man. But you getting high now, man. What the sick of telling you, man? Got your mommy's house. It's not you, Johnny. Come back home, man. 40 years old, Johnny, man. You should be ashamed of yourself. You want some attention? Give you some attention. Check it out. My brain on the top is long like marathons. More popular than tons of marijuana. If you ain't strong enough to carry on, I move heavyweight. You ain't never carry Sean. Free. You happy? I got him. You like the beer cane dropped in minutes. 40 and broke. Oof. Free. I just wanted to get to that part.
Yep. Yep. Listen, so there's some history.
You ever seen a fight that ended really? I'm sure you have seen a fight that ended really, really quick. Like soon as the bell rang or wherever, maybe it was at school or the club or whatever. And soon as they fight, the first punch that's thrown ends the fight. Freeway is responsible for not a first round knockout. Like I don't even think the bell was done ringing by the time the fight was over. That's one of the hardest one lines in history.
Yeah. Yeah, but you know, we all say crazy things when we're young. These two gentlemen are older now. They are more mature. But honestly, it was just a picture. Nobody has any idea. I mean, so Jay got on stage and like thanked him like that same night. But like probably because he knew he was in the building. So like that's the cool thing to do. And I guess it's good to know that they haven't held on. Because that was like what, 14 years ago, 15 years ago?
Yeah, That was 2002. So that's 15 years ago. Yep.
Right. So yeah, I guess I'm glad. You know, good to hear that they haven't held that grudge. But like, you know, it's not like we're gonna get Originators 19 or something.
It would have been cool though if he would have did Jigga What and Jazz would have did his verse. That would have been cool.
Agreed. I'm sure Jazz is like, hey Jay, I've been practicing.
Yeah. All right.
No, I know the words. Well, I mean, because you know that song is 19 years old. It's not a given he
does it at the show.
Well, right, but I'm saying like for Jazz, it's not a given that if you just pull him out of the audience, he's gonna pull that off. Breath control and everything. Yeah, that's not an easy.
No, yeah, especially for something like that, and you're in your 40s, and you're the opposite of Black Thought. I don't know if you are consistently like writing and performing. Yeah, that might be a lot for you.
Might be a lot for anybody.
Yeah, the Originators. Yeah, that would have been dope. Yeah. But, you know, shout out to Reconciliation.
There you go.
Shout out to Forgiveness. More forgiveness in 2018. More life.
So we're going to talk about this when we do our Inevitable Year End Wrap-Up. I've been listening to More Life a bit lately.
Listen, man.
It's curious.
It's an interesting project.
It's not even just an interesting project. If you would have told me 12 months ago, Drake's going to release this More Life project at the top of 2018, and then nobody's going to talk about him for the entire year, pretty much. I would have said, nah. Drake? Mr. Caribbean Jams?
Mr. Caribbean Jams, yeah.
Mr. J-Lo? Him?
Mr. J-Lo. Mr. Lopez. Aubrey Lopez.
All right, anyway. Anything else you want me to say about Jay and Jazz?
Nah, that's enough.
Okay. We got some albums to talk about.
Woo, yes, we do.
Okay. Where do you want to start? We should probably end with Eminem.
Yeah, we should end with Eminem.
And then should
we end with Eminem?
Yeah, we're going to end with Eminem.
I want to end on a high note, though.
So we're going to end with Nerd?
Probably. Yeah.
Okay. Can we talk about Big Sean and Metro and Jeezy in some order first, though?
Yeah, sure. We can start with Big Sean and Metro because that's the oldest album.
Right. Double or Nothing. This is Metro's new thing. Let's do 10 tracks, him and an artist, some guests, and go. Not much warning, just kind of gets put out.
I like it.
Yeah.
I like the idea. Metro doing that, yes.
Right. This is like 10 album tracks.
What do you mean by 10 album tracks?
Like, you know how like you can listen to, like sometimes you listen to me like, yeah, that's a good album track.
Okay, yeah.
It's not a single, it's not a banger, it's not a standout, it's not terrible.
I think Pull Up and Wreck is dope.
No, look, I like the audacity of that Diana Ross sample on Go Legend.
And they sampled my favorite depressing song from Set It Off right before Cleo died and then turned into an anthem about, I don't know, whatever these kids talk about, getting money or
what song was
Stop
this?
And Shine. That song is In Tune.
Oh yeah, Up Against the Wind. Right.
Samples Lori Perry Up Against the Wind, right. Which is like one of the most depressing songs ever, and then you turn it into a song about getting money. All right. That works.
Yeah, I like the first four tracks on here. Here's the thing. Metro is in such a zone. These are not, like, for the most part, I don't think any of these are really like AA plus Metro beats. I would say that none of these to me are really like terrible Metro beats either.
Yeah. I don't think the production is whack, and I don't think Sean is as whack as people are making him out to be.
He's learned a lesson I hope nobody has learned from 21 Savage, which is that you should sound like you're super like monotone and maybe half asleep. There's a handful of songs on here where I'm almost like, Sean, do you care?
Yeah. Yeah, because even the 21 Savage record, like, but 21 Savage is like, oh, you trying to sound like, not you trying to sound how not to care? Oh, okay. Let me tell you how little I care.
Don't care.
me. And then he's like, I'm a real dog. Grab a steel, dog. I'm in the field, dog. Get you killed, dog. Like, oh my God. This is where we, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, 21 Savage is my least favorite MC of 2017.
I also want to talk about him sitting in the back of a Maybach with Rosa Parks.
that was a good, I gave him credit for that.
No.
Yeah, I like that.
No. We didn't have all these episodes of CRS last year dealing with Ferguson and Black Lives Matter from Big Sean to rap about Rosa Parks strapped up in the back of the back saying it feels good to be in the back of the back. What?
Packing the Mac in the back of the back.
No. When she like, didn't he say she was blowing a blunt too?
Yes.
Jesus, Sean, get it together.
Rosa Parks is thugging out.
Man, don't disrespect Rosa Parks.
We're going to thug this shit. I know. Okay.
Rosa Parks is not pulling up on the bus listening to Capone.
Nori.
Oh, God.
She's driving a 95 MPV. She's got the Beef and Brock's on. She's going.
No, she is not. She's doing no such thing. And we've lost our black audience.
No.
Oh, boy.
There's nothing like Pull Up and Wreck might be a standout here. That really dumb Travis Scott hook on Go Legend will actually get stuck in your head if you're not careful. The Swae Lee track is surprisingly, I'm like, Swae Lee really phoned that in. I actually kind of like Thugga on his track.
I didn't get that far.
Yeah.
Not on the Young Thug track.
But this was fine.
It's fine for what it is.
Here's the thing. Like, I'm sure you could drop, like, you could take any number of these songs, drop them into a playlist of tracks from 2017, hit shuffle, and I think they'd work just fine. But nothing stands out. Maybe Pull Up and Wreck. I mean, I like Pull Up and Wreck. Kind of like Who Stopped Me a little bit. I mean, some of these records, like I said, these records aren't bad. They're just not like, I'm not going back to these. There's no like, oh my goodness, like they really brought it. Like, even like, I would say this record is much more consistent than the 21 Savage, Metro.
Is that Offset?
Offset rec album. But like, I like Ric Flair Drip more than I like any record on here.
I'll say this. So we were with Wes, we were talking about artists consistently putting out music, just putting it out because they want to, you know, either create momentum or sustain momentum or just feed their audience, whatever. This is what you're going to get. Like, you're going to get projects that are like, oh, shoot, Big Sean and Metro. And it might have been created in like a week. It might have been created in, you know, however long, a short amount of time. And it's not amazing, but it's still creating momentum. They're able to, they're touring off of this right now.
Sure.
So like, you have to look at it and say, okay, maybe I want to go to a Big Sean show because Sean is going to perform Marvin Gaye and Chardonnay. He's going to perform Click. Like, he's got records to do an hour set, right? He's going to perform the John Legend song about the Negro spiritual about saving the world, whatever that song is.
That's definitely the second to last song.
100%.
And then you close with, and then you close on something a little bit more energetic. But anyway,
you probably close with Click, because that's his biggest record. Or Mercy. No, you don't close with Mercy.
No. You're completely forgetting about his biggest record.
What?
I Don't F With You.
Oh, right. Is that bigger than Click?
Oh my goodness, yes. I would love to be at a concert where he does the John Legend record and then he goes to I Don't F With You.
Right. We can change the world, but I don't F with you. Right.
Right. You're right. Like this. Oh, keep going though.
I was going to say, yeah. So, you know, so maybe I only want to hear him perform Pull Up and Wreck, and Go Legend is the single too.
Yeah.
So, okay. So these two songs are good enough for me to pay my $30 to go see Big Sean do an hour's worth of song or hours worth of songs. And then Metro maybe does a DJ set where he plays records that he produced. His set could be 30 or 45, like 30 minutes too. And so this just gives them reason to go do that instead of them just popping up out of thin air and saying, hey, Big Sean and Metro are going on tour, and people are going to be like, why? This gives them a reason. So I'm not mad at it. I think people are just, there's still a transition with people judging why artists are creating music, but they keep asking artists to create music. So like, you're going to have to readjust and take things for what they are versus what you want them to be.
Hmm.
Everything's not going to hit. It's just not.
But when you're constantly putting out stuff, it's not, you know, if what you put out, you know, 5 months ago was good but not great, it's fine. But when you only put something out once every 2 years, well, that's a lot of pressure. That's a lot of pressure on that one project.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yep.
So somebody who isn't quite at the point where they're putting out little things here and there, but is certainly putting out records, albums once a year, is Jeezy, right?
Yeah.
Right, because Trap or Die 3 was last year.
Oh, was it? When did Seen It All come out?
I mean, Church in These Streets was the year before that.
Seen It All was
2014. So he is.
Was 2014.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. So out the blue, pressure. Is this a Def Jam album?
This is a Def Jam album. Yep. For the two lead singles were what? Bottles Up and Cold Summer.
Yep.
And then American Dream came out.
Yep.
This is a really interesting. This is kind of interesting, even though it shouldn't be as interesting as I'm trying to make it sound to be.
Here's
this album, the NERD album, and the Eminem album. You're hearing artists who did not come of age in what we now call the trap music era. I know T.I. and Jeezy are fans are flipping tables. That's fine. What I'm defining as trap music is this. It is the pitched snare, rapid hi-hat, 60 BPM era that we have been in for the last, I mean, depending how long, I mean, it somewhere between that first MMG album and, I don't know, pick your point. Like,
finally Rich, right?
Right. We moved to this, you know, we have been moving in this direction for a while now, right? And so these three projects, you have artists who, in various different ways, attempting to adapt to those sonic characteristics at certain times, right? So like some of these records, you hear Jeezy trying to keep his old tempo, right? That mid 70s kind of classic Jeezy, like 2004, 2005, 2006 era tempo, but with like modern percussion. And it's like, you know, You have some cases, and you know, he's trying because he's, you know, all the classic Jeezy ad libs are right there. Like, if you close your eyes, you can almost hear like a classic Jeezy sound, right? Where there's plenty of yes, like it's all the classics you all love and know. Except, I mean, here's the thing: like, most of these beats are not good. Most of these beats are just not very good.
Yeah, they're very. They're not. It's not that they're not good. They're just generic.
I mean, here, Bottles Up.
I should like this beat.
I like the beat, and if he did the Big Timer flow just on the hook, it'd be perfect. But
yeah,
you know, after a while, you're like, wait a minute, this is just the Manny Fresh flow for the entire song.
He's game spitting.
So you want to talk about how business and hip hop interact? So when they made this song, they meaning Jeezy and his people, Puff wasn't involved yet.
Of course.
They were trying to figure out who. They had two people in mind to guest on this. It was either going to be Big Timers or it was going to be Puff.
Mm.
Do you know why they went with Puff?
Why? Ciroc.
Ciroc. And there's some other brand that Puff is involved with that Jeezy's also involved with. And they were literally like, I read this, I think, on DJ Booth. Some guy who works with Jeezy wrote like a track by track breakdown of this. He was like, yeah, we figured it would just end up being like a 3-minute like commercial for those two things. So it was a no brainer. And I was just like,
No, we're gonna get into commercial. We're gonna get into commercial real soon.
Yeah, I was just like, oh, okay. I mean, you couldn't like, I don't know. Please tell me some enterprising DJ in the South is attempting to bring put the Manny vocals on this or blending the two songs together when you're playing back to back in the club. Cause like, how do you not put Manny on this?
Yeah,
but you know, the video is straight out of like '97.
I've seen the video.
Oh, it's high. It's like, it's pretty much just a, it's like a, it looks like a big budget Hype Williams video from the late 90s.
Mm.
So there's all sorts of nostalgia that they're like trying to get, but yeah. Do we want to talk about the American Dream record with J. Cole and Kendrick?
Sure.
What do you think about it?
Nah.
That's pretty much what I thought about it.
Yeah. I want the beat to like punch me a little more than it does.
The beat is just, it's fine. It's there. Yeah. I don't think this album is actually mixed particularly well. I don't know. Like the beats didn't really hit in really any particular kind of way. I kind of wish Kendrick had done like a full Kendrick thing on this.
We're going to talk about Kendrick real soon.
Yes, we are. I'm excited to talk about Kendrick. But I think the consensus is on that song is J. Cole came in and did his thing.
Yeah, and he did. Yeah. I really like the flow he used. The flow is really dope.
Yeah. It was almost a Kendrick like flow, actually.
Yeah, it was different. He was like he was playing with the different types of flows, and he was, you know, but there was still like content, you know. So
right.
I enjoy Cole's part for sure. Honestly, the only two records on this album that stand out to me.
Yeah.
Hold on, let me even pull up the album because I'm tripping. I still have Big Sean up. Hold on. People are just dying to know what I think. 2 Chainz smoked floor seats.
Yeah.
Smoked floor seats. Like, man, Dos Cadenas, like, y'all, when y'all get him, it's weird because on the Big Sean album, like, he was cool. But I think there were some other albums that came out this year that Mr. Cadenas was on and he smoked the verses too, right?
Yeah. He is, you know, when you talk about people who are underrated. 2 Chainz is underrated.
2 Chainz is super. It's really a crime that he gets put into that trap category. And even let me clarify what I think that Jeezy and T.I. are like the godfathers of trap, but their type of trap and the trap that you're referring to is like completely different. It's still got the same DNA in it, but it's just different. Like a record like 24's or Rubber Band Man or even like Trap or Die, Let's Get It, like those records wouldn't work now.
No, like, no. I mean, so the phrase like trap music is really interesting, right? Because you have the sort of T.I., Jeezy, like Atlanta sound of like 05, 06, right? And then you have what like the beats really started to shift with that MMG project. And of course, the influence of folks like Lex Luger, right? And then Lil Chop comes in with the pitched up snares, and everybody takes that and keeps iterating and iterating. And Mike Will, and now Metro, like folks are at the, and, you know, folks like Southside and the people who've been doing this for a long time, like they have this certain sound. But folks like, I think Ross is an interesting example there, like who kind of came up a little off that era, but like they were still on those beats. But then the new generation came in and then the vocals changed to match these beats. And now you get these very cold, dark, almost depressing sound.
Yeah.
And so like, you know, it is.
You almost kind of got to blame Abel for that.
Maybe a little bit. It's
that's Abel, Cudi, Kanye, Drake a little bit. Like, you know, they kind of took that very aggressive, because I feel like Finally Rich, Flockavelli, like those are two albums.
Right. Self-made. I always forget about one, like, I always forget about Waka. Yeah, Hard in the Paint is a crucial moment.
That's like peak Lex Luger. So those records really changed the trajectory of what trap music was. But then, you know, Day and Night, and I mean, particularly House of Balloons and stuff like that, like, you know, really changed it and made it really like depressing, really just this really moody trap sound, which has now blossomed into junkie rap, which we haven't really discussed that much on this show yet.
We've talked about junkie rap a lot.
Have we?
We don't like it.
Well, yeah, sure. But like, I mean, like, we haven't like name dropped anybody. We haven't listened to anybody. And you just kind of see these guys who are products of academics. Like, academics is low key like A&R and these guys using his platform to, present these guys to the world. And they're druggies, the dope fiends.
So that's that's who I need to send my hate mail to?
Yes, essentially. So back to Jeezy. So 2 Chainz smoked his record. I kind of like Pressure. I like the beat for Pleasure. I like the beat for Pressure. YG actually has a really dope verse on Pressure. And this is my first time hearing Kodak Black, like hear him rap.
Yeah. I love how for the YG record, of course they had to get something with that synth whistle, trying to do like a little West Coast style thing.
Well, here's the thing that people just kind of sweep under the table. So that Payroll Giovanni record and that T Grizzly record,
yeah.
Jeezy definitely, there was a period where Jeezy came up to Detroit and took that Detroit sound and was like trying to run with it. Detroit kind of has like this sound that is a hybrid of like Southern instrumentation with West Coast tempos, or maybe even a little faster than that.
Kind of like Mustard?
Yeah, like a Mustard tempo. Like a Southern production with like a Mustard tempo. Absolutely. Absolutely. And so, hearing these records on his album is not, it's not surprising
right
at all. But I'm not crazy about either one of those. T Grizzly gets on the record and starts telling on people. But I do like, I do like on the low, I don't know enough of Doughboy's Cash Out, but, everything that I've heard from them, whenever I hear records from them, it's usually pretty dope. They give me that Nipsey. There's like certain artists who make gangster music and you just believe them, and that kind of makes it better. Which is like, you know, who doesn't like a good gangster flick? Who doesn't love Casino and Goodfellas and, you know, Godfather 1 and 2 and stuff like that. So it's like, that music kind of sounds like that, except they're actually really doing that stuff. But yeah, all in all, so would you think of Jeezy? Like, did you think it was whack? Did you think it was good? Did you think it was a Jeezy project?
He is trying to like straddle that line between giving stuff that caters to his fans. Like there's records on here where he's trying to get like that horn driven sound, but it's just not like A+ lush, right? It doesn't. You know, you could tell that like it's not the same like big name producers as before on some of those beats. So you're like, nah, it doesn't really work, while also still trying to sound modern. Like he hasn't quite figured out where he wants to be yet.
Yeah.
But like vocally, like these tempos mostly work with him. He's putting in work. Like I think this is the thing, like at least historically, I feel like Jeezy has a pretty good ear for beats.
Yeah.
But I don't think that really carries through to this album. I feel like the beats are the problem. They're just not doing anything for me.
I also feel like his hooks are a little generic.
Mm. Oh man.
You know, Jeezy's normally known for really strong hooks, but like nothing on here is really like, yeah, really grab.
The future effect and the on hooks, right? Where, you know,
yeah,
you start just it's all these like super simple, repeated over and over and over and over again. And you take that that's the thing now. That's the trend. And you apply that to a guy like Jeezy, what is he supposed to do with that? That's not a Jeezy. That's not his world at all, you know?
It's not his world. Yeah. That's true. So it's kind of like, do what got you in the building when it comes to that. I wouldn't want Jeezy taking auto-tune and trying to sing and croon and all that stuff. So
he's at that sort of point where he needs to figure out, is he going to try to play with the kids, or is he going to be Jeezy and have his fan base and do his thing?
Yeah, I think he's going to be the latter, because, you know, think about it. Future was, I'll never forget when Future was on TM103 and we had a Future conversation, and we were saying, like, so what do you think the future of Future is?
Mm-hmm.
Future, Jeezy is really good for doing what it's clear that he's a pupil of Jay-Z. Like, one of Jay's biggest earmarks is taking the young guys and riding the wave of the young guys, standing next to somebody who's younger than you, who is able to do things that you can't, and merely you standing next to them helps you. So Jay did that with everybody from State Property to Kanye, like, list goes on. Jeezy, in the same vein, has never switched up who he was, but he'll stand next to, you know, a T Grizzly, and it works. But then also, when he does a record with Diddy, it doesn't look out of his league either. You know, he's kind of in that upper echelon. He's in that OG upper echelon where if he does a big record, an A-list record, he's able to command that. But then also, he can go to like a hole-in-the-wall club and show up for one of his young guys and it still be a thing. So I don't think Jeezy at this point, I think Jeezy is just going along to get along. And I really want to talk about, you know, the point you made with the Diddy record and Ciroc, because there's another album that we're going to talk about. Actually, these next two albums are clear indications of how artists, I'll just say hip hop, because I don't really pay too much attention to pop and other genres, but like, how hip-hop artists are making money in 2017. Because I think these next two projects are clear examples of that.